For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Okay, welcome everyone. So we are on page 40, chapter 8, and we just got to the death of Haman. So one of the questions are, why doesn't the Megillah just end there? That Haman's gone, and that's it. So there's a very interesting concept about Purim, and that is that after Purim's over, we don't make Havdalah. We don't say, all right, that's it, Purim's finished, no more, meaning that it doesn't really end. Purim is about seeing the miracles in everyday life, seeing that Hashem is behind all the activities, and that Hashem protects us even when we don't see it. And the joy in knowing that Hashem is looking out for us, and that he arranged that we had a sister in the palace, and he arranged that Mordechai should discover the plot to destroy the king, and he arranged that the king couldn't sleep that night, and he arranged that when he got angry at Haman, that Haman tripped and fell on Esther's bed, and he arranged that Harvona would turn on him and say, not only did he do that, he was going to hang Mordechai over there, and the king said, good, let's hang him on there, right? He arranged for all those things to happen. And so too in life, Hashem makes all the arrangements for us for the different things that have to happen. And that lesson of Purim, it's not supposed to be something that ends with Purim. It's something that keeps on going. And it's very interesting. In the very last rule in the Jewish code of law about Purim, it says something. It says v'lev. It says v'lev. Sameach mishta tamid. It says a person who is a happy heart, a person who achieves happiness, life is a party. Meaning that Purim is when we enter the month of Adar, we're supposed to increase our joy, and it doesn't say when we're supposed to decrease until we get to the morning for the temple in the summertime. But the idea, though, is that a person Purim doesn't end with the death of Haman. There are always going to be villains. There's always going to be ups and downs. But the attitude, the joy in knowing that Hashem is looking out for us and he does miracles for us, and that we're supposed to take into our everyday life. And when you think about it, throughout our history, we've had lots of Hamans. We've had so many great people that have tried to destroy us. And, you know, Khomeini is the newest one, you know, the Iranians with their nuclear. But Hitler tried to destroy us, and Stalin tried to destroy us, and many other people before them tried to destroy us. And these were big, mighty empires. The Romans tried to destroy us. And they're gone. And we're sitting here today, you know, and we look back in history and all these great, mighty people that tried to harm us and destroy us, and we're here. And we're, you know, and we're, so the part of the Purim message is to take the message of Purim and to continue with it. It says that at the time of Purim, the people were so happy to be Jewish that they accepted upon themselves even mitzvahs that they hadn't done before then. They accepted with great joy on Purim. And it says that non-Jews started converting in mass. That was the first big mass conversion movement, because people learned about Judaism. Mordechai was very popular, and so the Purim message continued. And so we're going to see that, and so therefore the Megillah continues, because there's more to the story, and there was a bad guy, he's hung, and now we're done. No, it's that he's hung, but Hashem constantly protects us in life from dangers, and Hashem is looking out for us, and we take joy that we're his people, and that sometimes we goof, but that he cares about us, and that he'll look after us, and he'll save us, and he'll redeem us. So it begins like this: Bayomahu nasna melcha chashverosh l'Esther amalcha es beis Haman. So the first thing that happened after the death of Haman is that Achashverosh gave the house of Haman to Esther. So Rahudim, and he made it known that Haman was being punished because he was the enemy of the Jews. So this would send a message to people not to harm the Jewish people. Now, the irony of it was that it was Haman's house, and he wanted to hang Mordechai in front of his house, and now it's going to be Mordechai's house, and Haman is hanging in front of Mordechai's house. That's going to be the irony. Mordechai bar lifnei hamelech, and Mordechai became famous in front of the king. In other words, he now took over Haman's position, almost. Now, why did that happen? Ki higida Esther mahula, because Esther told Achashverosh who Mordechai was, that Mordechai raised her, that Mordechai looked after her. But Yasser HaMelech es tabaso asher hevir Muhammad. Now, in those days, everything was to have the ring. The ring had a seal on it. And the seal meant it was the king's special seal. And if you had the king's seal, you could make a law. I mean, basically, you could, whatever you wanted to write, if you had that king's seal, it became the law of the land. And so this ring that had the king's seal, he took off Haman and he gave it to Mordechai. The Tosim Esther es Mordechai obeys Haman. And Esther, who had the house of Haman, she gave it to Mordechai. Haman was the second most powerful person after Achashverosh in the country. So putting him in charge of the house, it meant like he had an empire now. He had, you know, thousands of slaves and workers and factories and all types of things. And so the flip-flop was amazing. It went from Haman being this very powerful person who was trying to destroy the Jewish people. Now Mordechai became this powerful person. Now, Achashverosh, as we mentioned, was a funny person. Like, it wasn't like, okay, Haman was a bad guy and he's dead, so fine. So you would think that he would, on his own, not want to follow through with Haman's decree. It doesn't say that. He didn't do anything. So Esther realized right away, V'tosav Esther, and Esther went, V'tidabri lifnei HaMelech, and she went and spoke to the king. V'tifu lifnei Raglim, and she went and she fell in front of his feet, V'tef, and she cried, Tishanelo. With this king, you couldn't take anything for granted. She had to beg. And what did she beg? Lahavr esras Haman Agagi, to remove the evil decree of Haman, Vesmak Shavta, and all the thoughts and plans that he wanted to do, Asher Chashav al Yehudim. In other words, even though Haman had been killed, Achashverosh hadn't pulled back Haman's decree. It was more important to him that he didn't want to look bad. Well, I made the rule already, I can't change my mind. You always run into people like that, that they're so into their rules that they, oh, I can't make an exception, or I can't do this. It was just like a heartless kind of thing. And that's Achashverosh. But Yoshua Melech Esther Sharbit Hazav, and he leaned forward and extended the scepter to Esther. V'takam Esther, and Esther got up, V'tamar lifnei HaMelech, and she stood in front of the king, V'tomer, and she said, you see, Esther really knows how to talk. Like, you know, you see that constantly, how she presents herself. V'tomer, and she says, Imal HaMelech Tov. You know, if you think this is a good idea, there are certain people, they don't want to hear what you have to say, but if you can tell them it's really their idea, then they'll like it. You know, like, you have to convince them that they themselves had said that. So she said, you know, if you think it's a good idea, then, and you know, and if I found favor in your eyes, v'kasher hadavar, and it's a good thing, v'tov ani l'beinav, and you know, and you like me a little bit, but she's really laying this on over here. In other words, she has to say all of it, because otherwise this king, you can never know what he would do. So she said, yikasev l'hashav esesfarim, you know what, let's send out a second decree to remove the books, the Makshevas Haman, all of Haman's evil decrees that he wanted to do, then Abdasa. Now she mentions over here who Haman was. Why is that? Because she wants to show that Haman didn't do this because he cared about the kingdom. He didn't do this because it was good for the kingdom. No, he's the archenemy of the Jews. He's a Moloch. He's a descendant of Agag. Asher Kosev La'avedes Yehudim. He wrote these decrees to wipe out the Jewish people. Asher B'kol Medinos HaMelech, that are in all the various countries. So she says, you've got to remove these decrees. You've got to cancel them. You've got to send out a new decree nullifying the earlier decree. Why? Now, the king didn't care about the Jews. Obviously, he didn't. But she says, if you care about me, how do you expect me to go on in life? How could I see Bara Asher Yimses Ami? You know, you're going to guarantee me I have nothing to worry about. But if my people are being harmed, how am I going to be able to survive? How could I continue if I see the nation that I was born from is being destroyed? And that's the way we feel. If a Jew somewhere, you know, Jews are in distress in France or in Europe or in Israel, we feel connected to each and every Jew. We can't, we're beside ourselves when there's a tragedy somewhere. V'yomra melech ha-chashverosh l'Esther, and the king says to Esther, the queen, and Mordechai Yehudi. And he says to Mordechai the Jew, hinei beis haman nasati l'Esther. Now, it seems like he's getting defensive over here. He's saying, what do you mean? I gave you the house of Haman, and I hung him already. Why isn't that enough? Asher shalach yado b'yehudim. He's saying, look at all the things I've done. Va'atem kisru'al yehudim b'tovbeinam. Now, he doesn't really answer her. He doesn't remove the original decree. But what he does is, he says, if you know what? If you want, you can write a new decree, not removing the old decree, but the new decree will be to do some good things for the Jews, to allow the Jews to defend themselves. B'shem HaMelech, and then B'chasmu B'tabas HaMelech, and then you will sign it. Ki kasav asher nikta B'shem HaMelech. Now, what's his excuse? Why is he allowing the Jewish people to be massacred? Well, the decree that came out and was sealed with the king's signature, Ein L'Hasher, we can't do that. Sorry, no, if you remember when many people petitioned the governments of the free world to bomb Auschwitz, they said, you know, we can only bomb war targets. We can't do that. That'd be against regulation to bomb, you know, a civilian. Even though they were massacring tens of thousands of people a day, and they actually had bombed the factory next to Auschwitz. They weren't willing to bomb because those are the rules. We can't, you know. And then Jews had gone to, pleaded with non-Jewish authorities to help save Jews. No, we can't do that. Some people, they have a, when it comes to saving lives, we don't make excuses. We can't send that back, that decree. So they were forced to come up with their own means of writing a good decree. Now, part of it was that until the last minute, we didn't know how things would really happen. Even once Haman was hung, there still was a danger that was hanging over us. Vayikru sofrei ha-melech, and they called the scribes, b'chodesh ha-shlishi, in the third month of Sivan, b'shlosh v'eshrim bo. And v'kasu v'kol asher Sivan Mordechai. And Mordechai, he decided how to write this new set of laws. It's very complicated how to know how to write the laws, el Yehudim, and to the Jews. Now this next word is one of the more mysterious words, achashta panim. Let's see, even translate achashta panim. Let's see. He calls it satraps. It's a name of a certain kind of. Mm-hmm. You know what a satrap is?
No. What is it?
I think it's like a governor or a mayor or some kind of official, probably some kind of Persian official.
Somebody Google.
Yeah, Google what a satrap is. The Hebrew doesn't have, we don't use it currently in Hebrew. It's not a modern word. It's an ancient word. Achashtar panim. Some type of official. And Pachos and the other officials and the governors and the officers from all Mahodu Vad Kush, Sheva, of 127 different kingdoms together, Medina, and it had to be written in the different languages. There's so many different languages in the Middle East and Africa, and it had to be translated. Today we have computers and we have email. You know, in those days, everything had to be done by hand. So they had to immediately write 127 different, they had to translate it into 127 different languages, and then they had to send it to these countries, and many of them were, you know, it had to travel by a horse or by a camel to get the messages to these countries. But Yehudim, and they also sent to the Jewish people in these countries to be on the alert and to be ready. And it was written in the king's name, and it was signed with the king's seal. And they sent them in the runners with the horses. Those that ride these very fast horses. And this is also a tough word to translate. He calls it a swift mule. They had, it's like the supersonic jet of their day. They had one really fast way of transporting those. In other words, you had your standard, you know, slow-moving mule or horse, and then you had the super-fast one that was bred like a racehorse kind of. They had a certain one that was carried messages faster. Asher nosen hamelech leYehudim asher bekol ir ve'ir, and the king gave to the Jewish people lahakel la'amid al nafsham, to stand up and to save their lives. There is a saying that's accurate, is that God helps those that helps themselves. He wanted us to, we couldn't just sit back and expect a miracle, but if we would stand up to protect ourselves and to help each other, then Hashem would enable us to defeat our enemies. Lahashmin, laharig, la'aved, and to destroy and wipe out, as kochel am va'am, whatever people that would come against us.
Rabbi Stein, well, how is this different? In a way, than before, wouldn't the Jews have tried to save themselves before, tried to fight back, or
it might not have been legal. In other words, the official government policy to exterminate the Jews. Then, if the Jews had tried to fight back, they would have taken away their weapons. They would have been against the law to kill these people. Now, it's very difficult in a time of war. To only fight against soldiers. In other words, if you're fighting back, especially so they even had permission, if need be, to destroy the women and children. That's what it says. In other words, whoever is going to be their enemy and come against them, they would not be prosecuted. Now, over here it says that officially, Shlalom Lov was that when you kill these people, you're allowed to take their property. These people that are your enemies, you could loot them. Now, we're going to see over here that Mordechai and Esther wanted to fix a problem that we had, that their great-great-grandfather, King Saul, had a mitzvah to wipe out a Amalek, and he goofed. And that was, when you destroy a Amalek, you're not supposed to take any booty. When we destroy a Amalek, it's evil, and if you fool around and you take the money and you take the animals and you spare some of them, before you know it, you're corrupted. And he made a really big mistake, because the Jewish people have a hard time throwing away stuff. That's always been, look, you've got to wait, it'd be such a waste, to such good animals, you know. And they said, we could use them for the shul, you know, we'll give them for offerings, and, you know, such a waste, such nice animals, King Saul sort of stood his ground and said, no, we have to, you know, we can't save any of it, we got it. But unfortunately, he didn't have the backbone at that time to stand up to the people. He was very modest, and the people didn't want to waste such nice animals and such good animals and the sheep and the cows. And they even wanted to save the king, you know, this aged king of the Amalekim, Agag. They said, you know, that, you know, let's show respect for his office. He's a king after all, and they didn't want to kill him. And he spared them, and this was his mistake. So now that Esther and Mordechai, his descendants, are leading the fight against Amalek, so they made a decree that nobody should take the booty, that they shouldn't benefit from the booty, that it should be, this was a war, a defensive war to save ourselves, and we're not interested in taking their booty. On the 13th of the month, and then this is the month of Adar. So this was the rule that was sent out. And they sent out these rules. And it was published, like, hear ye, everybody should know. As we turn the page, that the Jews should be ready on this day to take revenge against their enemies. Now, the runners had just come back from the previous message that was sent out by Haman. Those very same runners and the same messengers now had to carry the new messages, with the new messages that the Jews would be able to defend themselves, and they'd be backed by the government. And everybody in Shushan knew about it. Verse 15. Now, this is one of the verses that we read out loud. There are certain very, like, happy points in the Megillah, where they... when Haman was hung, that's not the point we read out loud. I mean, it's not, yay, we defeated. I mean, we were happy that he was hung, but it wasn't over till it's over. Now, at this point, we begin to see that the Jewish people are going to be saved. So, Mordechai yotzu ifnei hamelech, and Mordechai went out from the king, belevush malchus. It's very interesting, the clothing that takes place in the Megillah. Purim is one of the only holidays we celebrate with costumes. And a lot of the Megillah was around clothing. If you remember, the whole thing started when Vashti and Achashverosh wore the Kohen Gadol's clothing at the party. That was where the Jews shouldn't have gone there and eaten, while they were wearing the clothing of the Kohen Gadol at the party. Now, Mordechai, if you remember, what does he do? He puts on sackcloth. And Esther calls him to meet with him in the queen's chambers, and he says, "I can't take off my clothing." And then he takes off this, later on, he takes off the sackcloth and he puts on the king's robes. And now again, it describes Mordechai putting on different clothing. And so it's just interesting, if you just study the Megillah from the clothing aspect, it seems to go into great detail about the clothing. And it does over here as well. And Mordechai is wearing the royal clothing. Only the royals could afford the really expensive clothing. Tehillas v'chur, he had a gold crown, the tachrit boots, and all kinds of fancy things, vargaman and purple, the ear Shushan salavisamecha. And in the city of Shushan, now it sounds like even the non-Jews were happy. Haman was, there are a lot of dictators out there that people seem to go along with, and when they're defeated, there's rejoicing. And so when Haman, with this downfall of Haman and his terrible decrees, the whole city was happy. Now this verse here is a famous verse. It's one of the ones we read in Havdalah. What was happening with the Jewish people? To the Jews, Ahaisa Ora, now there was light. People were depressed and dark, it says before, when the decrees were hanging over their heads, they couldn't see in front of them. When a person is depressed and sad and has terrible things to worry about, they can't look 2 days in advance because they're afraid of what the next day will bring. But when the decree was lifted, there was like light. It was like they could see, it was bright, it was happy. Just walk outside today after the class and enjoy the light. You'll see the feeling of what light represents. V'simcha, and there was joy. V'sasan. Hebrew has many different words for different types of joy. There's a description in other places that this refers to different mitzvahs that they did. They wore their. It used to be that people were afraid to wear their signs of Judaism out in the public. It's become very popular today, like to do a news show about what it's like to wear a yarmulke in France, because they've had news reporters wear yarmulkes, and you can't walk in the streets of France with a yarmulke without being spit at or threatened, or it's just, and this is a country that brags about being free and respectful, and people are afraid to go out with signs of their Judaism. They just had, it was in the news, I think, with Kirk Douglas, that his grandson wore a Jewish star in some rich hotel in France, and there were anti-Semites who were picking on this 12-year-old kid. It was just
last summer, and CSY was, it was in Italy and Greece, and their advisors told them, take off the kippah, put on caps, mm-hmm. tuck in the tzitzit. Zoe has her name in Hebrew,
mm-hmm.
that she had to wear inside or take it off.
Really, that's the.
And they referred to their advisors not as rabbi, but as professor.
Wow.
That was just last summer.
Yeah. And so it's like people were. It's hard living like that. It's hard to live in fear, not to be afraid to show who you are and to have to hide it. So until then, the Jews were afraid. Now they could. There was light and joy. They could walk out as Jews in public. Ubekol Medina, Bekol Ir V'ir, and in all these different, this was in Shushan, but in every country, in every city, wherever people heard about it, people were happy. Because now they saw there wasn't going to be this mass murder and this unjust destroying of Jews, and the Jewish communities, they were rejoicing. Simcha, Sasan, Mishtev, Yantav, they made parties, and when a person's life is in danger or they have something hanging over them, and Hashem removes that, a person is supposed to celebrate. In fact, different communities have what they celebrate their own Purims, so to speak, when there were different decrees or dangers, and it's removed, then they should make a yearly celebration of that event. And people in their own lives, if they have different, if they were in danger and Hashem saves them, it's appropriate to celebrate. The Hasidim, they do this. They have like parties on the anniversary when their Rebbe got out of prison or when their life was spared or some great occasion. But that is appropriate. If a person experiences a miracle or experiences a salvation, that's something that you celebrate every year. We have to be grateful for that. The Rabbi Ma'am Oretz Mis Yahadim. And many of the people of the land became Jewish. It was the popular thing. It's such a funny thing, like here in Persia, you can imagine, like people, all of a sudden, they wanted to be Jews. They were the ones to join. Now, it says, Kinafo pakta Yehudim alein, because they were afraid of the Jews. Isn't that interesting? Like, first they were going to wipe out all the Jews, and now they're afraid of the Jews. And this was during the 12th month of Adar, Bishlosha on the 13th, because they had heard the king's message. Now this was the day that their enemies were going to rule over them, Benahapachu. This is what they use this word for the songs in the Megillah, Benahapachu. It means the turnabout. It was flipped over. In other words, the very same day that was supposed to be the day of destruction and harm to the Jewish people, it was the opposite. That was the day that the Jewish people defeated their enemies. On the very same gallows that Mordechai was supposed to hang from, that's where Haman was hanging from. Benahapachu was the opposite. That the Jews ruled over their enemies. Nikalo Yehudim Bareim, the Jews gathered in their cities. Now we mentioned that Purim, part of the reason that we had this decree against us is that we lacked unity. We weren't together. And so part of what we do on Purim is we get together. We have unity. And it mentions over here that the Jews got together. Nikalo, they had their kehilas. They gathered together in their congregations. But Kol Medina Samelcha and all the different countries. Lishlach Yad Mevachshei Rosam to fight against those that tried to harm them. The Ishlo Yamid Lifnehem. And every single country they were successful. This was like winning hundreds of battles. Ki Nafu Paktim Al Kolamim, because the fear of the Jews was on all these nations. They figured that if Haman was so powerful and Mordechai defeated him, they better not mess with the Jews. And also because Esther was in the palace. And so they understood that the power now between Mordechai and Esther, they were the power that be in the country. We have all the satraps again, all the different officers that belong to the king. Menasses Yehudim. They all, now it was popular to be a Jew. They all lifted up the Jews, because they were afraid of Mordechai. And this is a discussion of Mordechai. An interesting thing happened is that Mordechai now had to take a role of being like the prime minister of the country. And Kigadol Mordechai Vesem, Mordechai became a very important person in the house of the king. Vishamu Holuk, and people all over the world had heard about Mordechai. Ki Ish Mordechai Holuk Vigadol, he became more and more famous. Vayach Yehudim Bekolivei Machas Cher Beherig, and the Jews, wherever they fought, they destroyed their enemies. Vayas Vesenem Kirtonim, and they could do whatever they pleased with them. Ubashushan Habira, and in Shushan, Yehudim Ba'avim Chameshmei, they killed 500 people. What's amazing was, even after all this, that their enemies would even attack them. That even after Achashverosh said the Jews could defend themselves and the government would help them, and Mordechai was so powerful, there still were anti-Semites that came out to fight against them. Even in the capital city where Mordechai was the most powerful person, there were 500 people that came out against them. And here we have the list of the 10 sons of Haman. That's Parshdasa, Dalfan, Asvasa, Parasa, Adal, Adraita, Parmashta, Arisa, Aridai, Vaizasa. So it's very interesting. When they read the Megillah, they read them all together in one breath. That's the one part of the Megillah where it sounds, you know, it's like really quick.
It all sounded like that. Right,
that's right. What is the one thing was that each one of Haman's sons was powerful. This was like each one of them was a governor, each one of them had lots of resources, and each one of them potentially could have rebelled and harmed the Jewish people, and it in a miraculous way, they all 10 were defeated, like they were just one. And so therefore we don't want to spend much time on them, so we just read about them on one breath, and they were all hung from the same place.
What happened to his wife?
Oh, so we don't know. Whatever did happen to his wife. So apparently she was included in the house of Haman that was given to Mordechai and to Esther. So it's interesting. It doesn't say that they hung her or what they did. It doesn't mention what happened to Zeresh. We don't know. That's a good point. Aseres ben Haman, these 10 sons of Haman, ben Amdasit, Tzora Yehudim, he was the enemy of the Jews. Hargu, they were killed. Ubabiza, but they didn't take any booty. Again, they learned the lesson of with Amalek that they didn't worry about the money, they didn't worry about all that. It was shame to waste all that good booty. No, they didn't touch the booty. Now, the government officers brought the number of casualties in front of the king. Now, the Jews were a little worried now that maybe that the king would see people were being killed. Maybe he'd be mad at them. Maybe he would stop. So the king called the queen and he said, you know, in Shushan they killed, even in the capital city, 500 Jews and the 10 sons of Haman. Bashar Medina Sama, who knows what happened in the other countries? And he actually showed favor. Now, these were the same people who he had pointed before to destroy the Jews, and now they were being destroyed, and he himself had a change of heart. And he turns now this time to Esther, and he says, what can I do for you? Whatever you like. You want anything else? I'm happy to do it. Verse 13. Such a funny king. He said, if the king likes it, you know what? If the king, if it's a good request, how about let's do this again another day? She understood that there were still, the job wasn't finished. And many times, you know, in the first Gulf War, the first President Bush, they didn't defeat Saddam Hussein, and they had to go back again and do it. And that's why we had so much trouble. If they'd only done it the first time, then many times you do a job, but you don't do it all the way, and then you have lots of trouble because you didn't go far enough. You didn't do it completely. So Esther said, you know, if the king would only let us, one more day would really defeat all of these wicked people. So now, in order to set an example, they hung these 10 sons on the tree. But Yomar Malchus came, the king said, go ahead, Vitinosidas, and they made the rule in Shushan. Vasiris Bnei Haman, and they hung the sons of Haman. Vekalo Yehudim Asher B'Shushan Gam, and they got together on the 14th. This is the holiday of Shushan Purim. L'chodesh Adar, V'yahag B'Shushan, and then they killed another 300 enemies of the Jews. V'vizeh L'sholchos Yadam. And what's also interesting is you would have thought that some Jews somewhere would have taken some of the booty. But no, there entirely nobody touched any of the booty. Ushar Yehuda Mashiach Bedino Samelach, and in the other cities of the kingdom, as we turn to page 48, the other Jews in the different cities. In Hebrew, when you talk about something lengthy, you talk about the whole Megillah. You know, it means it's a long Gansa Megillah. V'yavan Anashim, and they withstood against their enemies. V'noach Ma'aveyam. When you have something happy that to talk about, you go into great detail. You know, when a person talks about like they were at a wedding or you go into all the details because we're thankful to Hashem for such a thing. And so the reading of the Megillah here, they were quite a little bit lengthy in describing the different things that happened here. Vahorib, they killed their enemies. And this was Hamishim Vashima, 75,000 enemies of the Jews were killed. That's a lot of people.
They knew who to kill?
Apparently they came up against them. They fought against them. The people were like public parties of people that wanted to destroy the Jews. And this was on the 13th. And they rested on the 14th, and they made it a they made it a day of having parties and rejoicing. Now the Jews in Shushan, their schedule was a little different. They gathered on the 13th and the 14th, and they didn't rest until the 15th. So they celebrated on a different day. Now, it's the only holiday that we have that you celebrate on different days. Now, some Jews celebrate the 14th, and some Jews celebrate the 15th. It's interesting in that way that it's a... some people say that the way to have unity is to allow people to... do things in their own individual way. Unity doesn't mean that everybody does the same thing, but unity means we have a common sense of purpose. So you want to celebrate on the 15th, celebrate on the 15th. We'll celebrate on the 14th. And other Jews in the other walled cities, they also did the 14th for Chodesh Adar L'Simcha Mishtav Yontav. Now, over here is mentioned the other custom that developed. U'meshalach manos ish l're'ehu. And we send... Manos are gifts. Gifts means at least two. One man to his fellow man. And so, and it also, it doesn't mean a gift. It actually means a food gift. It means a portion of food. So there's a mitzvah to send two types of food to your fellow man, to your friend, to your neighbor on Purim. And it's interesting, it uses the word to send. So it became a custom that when you send shalach manos, you... at least one of them you should not deliver yourself, but have somebody else be your delivery person. Because it says to send the shalach manos. It could be that that's the way we try to do the custom. U'mishalach manos, which means to send them gifts, ish l're'ehu. And again, what's the reason? That, first of all, we believe true joy comes from getting together and being friendly and being inclusive. But Haman accused us of being... separate and not caring for one another, and that we wouldn't stick up for one another. And so the way to fix that was to celebrate with unity and showing friendship to one another. And so all of the mitzvahs of Purim have to do with unity and getting together and sending presents to each other. V'yiktav Mordechai said dvarim me'elah. So Mordechai codified it. He wrote these things down. V'yishlak sforim. Now, he sent it to the Jewish communities that were in B'kol Medina Samelach, Achashverosh, Akrovim, Merchokim. He sent this to the nearby communities and to the far off. 21. That they should not just celebrate this one time, but they should make it part of the calendar. Every year, the 14th and the 15th, the kosher every year at this time, 23, because these were the days that Shenacha Behema Yehudi Me'aveham. These were the days that we defeated our enemies, that we were finally at rest, and we didn't have to worry about our security. Vachodesh, and this month, which we're still in, Asher Nahapach Lehem, and again we have that word flip about or turn about. This was the month that things turned over. And they turned over Miyagon from woe to joy, Umeevil from mourning to yantuf. And so the power of this month is that things can change. Even things that seem people that are sad and depressed and bad news, they can turn to good news. Lasso Yemei, these should be days of parties and rejoicing. Umishalach manos ish l're'ehu, and it mentions again the giving of gifts to the fellow man. And now it throws in the final mitzvah of the day, umatanos levyonim, and gifts to the poor. That's not necessarily food. It just means if you can celebrate and you can have a party, it's because you can afford to have food and drink, and you can afford to send food and drink to your neighbors. But the poor people, how could they celebrate? So it's important to think of them, and at every holiday we try to think of those that don't have. We try to take care of them. 23. V'kibbul Yehudim. Now, this was the message that Mordechai was suggesting that everybody should do. And v'kibbul HaYehudim, and they listened, which is also a miracle. Like, you can make all kinds of suggestions, right? But they listened. They, as the Shehichu Lassos, they all agreed that they would continue to do what they had begun. And they agreed with what Mordechai wrote. Why? Because they realized the danger they were in. Because Haman, this terrible Amaleki, he hated all Jews. He wanted to destroy the Jews, to destroy them. And he threw a lottery, and that's the lottery, to destroy them. It's interesting that one of the questions about Purim is the name. Why is that so important about the lottery, the throwing of the fact that Haman threw the lottery that he threw? What happened was, when he selected the day to destroy them, Haman on his own probably would have wanted to destroy them right away. And if that would have happened, we wouldn't have been able to prevent loss of life, because especially in the far-off countries, Jews would have been killed. But when he threw the dice, he was superstitious. What happened was that the date of the destruction was pushed off by 11 months. And so that gave us time to overturn the decree. And so really the miracle was that the lottery, Hashem worked it out, that when Haman threw, now when it landed on the month of Adar, Haman said, wow, that's the month where Moses died. He was sure that Hashem was sending him a message that he was going to help him destroy the Jews, but it was exactly the opposite. Because it was so far off in the future, then we would be able to overturn it. And so
that was also when he was born.
That was also when he was born. That's right.
That's right.
So part of the idea of a poor is that it's almost like that there's a lottery, or that, first of all, that nothing is by chance. Haman said, you know, that he thought it was an accident, or that really Hashem did this on purpose to save us. And it's also that there's this flip of the dice, that Hashem manipulates events for the benefit of the Jewish people. And then when they came in front of the king, now even after Haman was destroyed, it took a lot of work to get the king to nullify those decrees. So first they defeated Haman, and then they got the king who never agreed to anything. And this was a bloody king. I mean, he agreed to murder people. I mean, he agreed to murder his wife and to murder his prime minister. And he's always murdering people and making parties. That's all we know about this king, right? He loves to make parties for 180 days and then 7 days, and then he murders this one. But constantly just parties and murder. Those are the two things that Ahasuerus specialized in. But they convinced him somehow to nullify the decree, Asher Chashav, that he had wanted to do on the Jews. That had fallen back, Vesalu Osu Vesbanav Alaetz, and Haman and his kids were hung on the tree. Al Kain, therefore, Kol Yom Me'ele Purim. Therefore, the name of the holiday was called Purim, Al Shema Pur, on the name of the lottery, on the fact that that Haman thought that he would that he could throw a dice and things happened by chance, and that Hashem wasn't the one in control. Now, it goes back to really Haman's ancestor, Amalek, which was when the Jews left Egypt, all the nations of the world were afraid of them because they heard about the 10 plagues and they heard about the fact that Hashem had saved the Jewish people. And Amalek said this was just an accident. You know, maybe the Nile River turned, they had some Georgia clay in the water and it turned red, and then the frogs had to jump out because then the fish died and they had a plague, and they had all kinds of reasons for the things that happened. That was just an accident. And in order to prove it, they came out to fight against the Jewish people and to show that it was all an accident. There was no God, there was no, Haman is defeated by showing that Hashem is really behind all of the events. And we live at times where we don't see the open miracles, but we have to, the message of Purim is that Hashem is behind the throwing of the dice, that he's behind the way things happen. Al-Kodibra Agaris, and this letter that was written to Maran, what happened and what reached them, that's about the Megillah. Now there's two words here on verse 27 that we talk about, which is that after Purim, some of the Jews were keeping their Judaism, but it was difficult. They were living in non-Jewish countries, and they were a minority, and there weren't enough kosher restaurants and other things. They missed a lot of parties, and so it's not always easy to be a Jew. But at this point, Kimu v'Kiblu, the Jews, they accepted upon themselves. There's a tradition that when the Torah was given, many people accepted it out of fear. There's a medrash that says that Har Sinai was like over our heads, so to speak, that we had really no choice. We had to accept the Torah. But at this point in history, the Jews were so in love with Hashem that they accepted the Torah. They were kimu v'kiblu. They were very happy to do whatever they could to because they realized that Hashem was looking out for them. And they also accepted to do the Torah, not only for them, but for us too, for Al Zarim. Sometimes we say, well, I never agreed to do this. Why do I got to go to Hebrew school? No, our parents knew what was good for us, and they accepted it for themselves and for their descendants. Valkel and everybody who was part of their households, and these 2 days, and every year, and every throughout the exile, every year, they're holidays. And these days, and every generation, Mishpacha, mishpacha, every family, Medina, Medina, every country, and every city, Meipurim lo yavur mitoka Yehudim. And wherever you find Jews, they always celebrate Purim. Vizikram, and the memory lo yosem azarim will never go away. The Medrash says that in the future there'll be great miracles when we come back to the land of Israel, and some of the old miracles we won't celebrate as much because there'll be newer miracles. Here it seems to say that Purim will never disappear. There will always be, the message of Purim will always resonate with us, and it will always be passed down. And Esther and Mordechai, they wrote it all down. The Kaimis Igeris of Purim, they made the rules a second time. The Yishuk's Forum, and they... that's good. That's another one of those letters that, which I didn't do my homework to find out why it's... Okay.
It says in the note, in the margin.
Oh, okay. So he says the Tav is like the last of the miracles of the. This is the last book of the Tanakh, by the way, was the book of Esther. After this book, they put the final page on the Tanakh. In other words, in the beginning they had the book of Yeshua, and then they added each book of the prophets. But when after the book of Esther, the Tav is the final letter, which means this was the last of the books that were written. If somebody wants to write a beautiful book, you can't get it included in the Tanakh.
But is that a future with the Tav?
It's the last letter.
I know, but
it does mean that in the future.
It's a future tense.
Mm-hmm. Well, it means that she wrote this as the sealing of the Tanakh of the. This was the final message, so to speak, that as the Jews were going to go into exile, that they would see that Hashem was looking out for them, even when they faced the anti-Semites and they faced other things. And it mentions Esther the queen. Now, at this point, she can mention who she was from. She was the daughter of Abihail, or Mordechai, and Mordechai the Jew, and they wrote this down. And the Yishlach Sforim, and they sent, they knew that they wanted to not just have people keep Purim, but they wanted them to institute it, that it should be like other holidays. First 30 of Yishlach Sforim, El Kol Yehudim, and they sent these books to all the different Jews in the 127 kingdoms, Divrei Shalom Ve'emes, and these were words of peace and words of truth. It's just interesting how it's described. And these words were L'chaim Yishmei Purim, to keep the days of Purim and the holidays. Like they had accepted Mordechai Yehudi, Esther, and Malka, Kasher Kima and Nafshon, because our lives were in danger, Valzaram, and for our children, and these were included the fast of Esther, which is the last of the fasts. I mean, we have other optional fast days, but this is the last of the fast days that we all keep. The Zakasam, and this became the last Jewish holiday. It's really the holiday of Esther, where there's the fast of Esther and the celebration of Purim. Umaimra Esther Kiyam, and they kept what Esther wanted. Divra Pur May these days, Venikta Besefer, and everything was written up. Now, most people wonder why the Megillah doesn't just end here. It's interesting. It continues on. V'yashav Melech HaChashverosh Masalor. Now the king raises the taxes. Nobody knows why that gets thrown in here. Some people say many times a king can't raise taxes unless he's very powerful. And what happened was, now that he had Mordechai in charge, the country finally had some common sense in the top, and he could raise the taxes. And all of the other people say that since this was written in the times of the king, they had to write something, you know, nice about the king, so to speak, and all of the deeds and the greatness of the king, Parshas Gedulas Mordechai and Mordechai Asher Gadol HaMelech Elohim Ksuvim. There are many other details that, and if you want, you can open the history books. They're written in the history books, Divrei Hayamim LeMalchei Madayo Pras. In other words, that there were many other details and other things to know about Achashverosh and Mordechai and many things that happened, but those are written in those books. And now we have the final verse of the Megillah, and we also read this out loud when we finish the Megillah. Ki Mordechai Yehudi, because Mordechai the Jew, Mishne LeMelech HaChashverosh, he was the second in command to the king. V'gadol la Yehudim, and he was the great one amongst the Jewish people. V'rotze l'roi v'echa. Now this is very funny. It says most people liked him. It's a very funny thing. Why doesn't it say people liked him? Why does it say... So there's a famous rule, which is you can't make everybody happy. If you think you can make everybody happy, you'll never be happy, because not everybody will be happy. That's the... Even Mordechai, as great as he was, most people were happy. So that's good. You got a majority. Majority of the Jewish people say he's doing okay. Good. Some people weren't happy because Mordechai was a teacher. And once he got taken by the government to work in politics, he couldn't teach Torah anymore. He wasn't available. It's like they took our rabbi away from us. And so some people weren't happy with him, but he didn't have much choice, because he felt with a king like Achashverosh, there were always dangers to the Jewish people from anti-Semites and from king, and he had to use his position in the government to save Jewish people. But some people said, "Nah, don't go over there. Come back and teach us like you used to." Dorish Tov La'amo.
They don't translate it that way.
Oh, they don't? Okay.
He was a great man among the Jews.
They don't say verut, and popular with the multitude. Yeah, the word rov actually means the majority, but he says it with many. He was popular with many, meaning with many he was popular, but there were always some who didn't like it. But v'dorish tov la'amo. But Mordechai, even though he was very popular, he used his position for the sake of his people. And that's what, if Hashem gives a person something, use it for the Jewish people. Dorish tov la'amo. V'sholom l'kol zaro, and do it for peace, and look out for their welfare and for their benefit. And so that's the end of the Megillah, which is the idea of service, of working for the community and working on behalf of the community.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it, so that he can continue that site.